Today on the Science and Spirituality podcast, I had the privilege of interviewing an amazing psychedelic therapist. Her name is Sunny Strasberg. So a quick bio on Sunny Strasberg: LMFT, a licensed psychotherapist, educator, and pioneering author, specializes in psychedelic therapies and training clinicians to be skilled and trauma-informed psychedelic therapists. Mrs. Strasberg advocates for future technologies serving social good. As the founder of the Theradelic approach, she equips clinicians and with trauma-informed psychedelic-assisted therapy methods, blending internal family systems, EMDR, archetypal psychology, trauma-informed care, and her extensive experience. Her debut book, The Theradelic Approach, delineates these innovative methodologies, elevating therapeutic standards of best practice. Sunny catalyzes transformation among leaders in AI, technology, business, investment, and entertainment, fostering empathy and connectivity. Collaborating with Dr. Richard Schwartz, she creates impactful experiences, inspiring compassion and creativity. Having served as a clinical director for VR mental health projects, she gained firsthand experience on the ethical challenges of these technologies. This has inspired her to pursue opportunities to ensure responsible AI development. And Sunny's expertise resonates through her engagements as Psychedelic Science, IFS Conference, SXSW, EMDRIA, and the Expanded States of Consciousness Worldwide Summit. So it was a mouthful, but I believe worth it to say because this woman is incredible. And I'm really looking forward to having this, had looked forward to this conversation because I record these intros after. And it's fantastic. This is the first time I mentioned this in the very beginning that we had someone on speaking about psychedelic assisted therapy. And I think Sunny was the perfect one to speak on this. She has such an incredible background and approach as an artist and someone who really does honor that archetypal psyche, that mind that looks at symbols and how we deal with things internally through our dreams and images that come to us, which is so key in psychedelics, if you know. So it was a great approach. And Sunny was incredible to give background as well on different psychedelics and their origins. And her book is incredible as well. So I hope you're having a great time in watching this or listening to this episode. And enjoy. We'll talk soon. Welcome to the Science and Spirituality Podcast, where we dive deep into universal spiritual principles and ground them in modern science. My name is Chris Carton.
And my name is Kevin Carton. And we are committed to simplifying the spiritual side of success for you with easy to understand scientific research so you can walk away with practical tools to create radical transformations in your life. Let's get started.
Welcome to the podcast, Sunny.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. I'm excited to have this conversation. I love the title of your podcast. It's so good.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And honestly, what we're going to be talking about today, what you obviously have a profession in, is I think a really beautiful blend of both. Yeah. And in such a organized way with a therapy practice. So I'm really excited about this because also just for, we didn't talk about this before we hit record, but on our podcast, we have not ever had someone on to share about psychedelic assisted therapy. Mm-hmm. So
wow, the first, amazing. I yeah, love to we have be had the first ambassador.
Exactly. 216 episodes. And we haven't, we've touched on like that. Me and my brother have had our own experiences of it, but it wasn't in this very professional way of like set up to for a therapy, you know. It's more so we've used it. I mean, a decade ago now, but like as an entertainment thing, but we've since evolved past that and not advocated for that, but knowing the power of that. And we've done some research just looking into some of the published research on assisted therapy, and it's phenomenal what's coming out now. So
absolutely. I'm excited to talk to you about it.
Yeah. So let's go right to the beginning of where you started out with even getting into this path, because it's relatively new, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of having psychedelic assisted therapy, and especially say in North America, that it's again, in that professional setting and like legal in a way. So tell us.
Yeah,
your background.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, Stan Grof and Bill Richards were doing amazing research way back in the 60s before it was made illegal. So actually, research on psychedelics has been going on in the United States for decades. And then, of course, in the, you know, in indigenous cultures have been using it for thousands and thousands of years. And it's really important to couch that conversation in the traditions where these medicines have, you know, come from. Yeah, but I knew pretty early in my life, having early psychedelic experiences when I was traveling to Latin America, that there was incredible power, healing power to these medicines. I mean, talk about spirituality. I mean, if you know, like direct access to the divine, right? So that was really obvious to me early on. I was originally trained as an artist. And so obviously the visionary aspect of psychedelics, of ayahuasca, was just really incredible. And I knew I had such an elevation of mood that I knew that it was therapeutic. I never thought I was going to be able to use it in my practice. I became a therapist later in my career and originally was trained in archetypal psychology. So Jungian psychology, which is so beautiful, doing dream analysis and, you know, all of the archetypes and symbols that we have in our, you know, lives, waking and in our dream lives, is incredible. But my first internship was at a school for kids with autism, and we were doing all behavioral techniques. And then my second internship was at a drug and alcohol inpatient center, and it was all cognitive behavioral therapy. So I wasn't using any of my Jungian psychology, right? But I always loved doing dream analysis. And then as the years progressed, I followed, I'm a big Burning Man person. I've been going to Burning Man for years and years, and met Rick Doblin in, I think, 2005, and Sasha Shulgin, who invented MDMA then. And they were speaking at Burning Man. I had audiences of, like, you know, 50 people. So it's hilarious to me how much it's grown.
Right.
As soon as I could, you know, after I got trained in therapy and was using, you know, Jungian techniques in my practice and got trained in trauma, as soon as I thought it was feasible, I started attending, you know, schools and training for psychedelic therapy. When that started happening and it was revitalized thanks to Rick Doblin and his work at MAPS on MDMA. So I got trained pretty early and started working for different training programs, training other practitioners, where we were using ketamine. And ketamine currently is the only legal psychedelic in the United States. It's technically a Schedule 3 medicine. All the other classic psychedelics are Schedule 1 with the FDA, which means that they have no therapeutic value whatsoever and high addiction potential, which is completely false.
Right.
And the science, I mean, all the research that's coming out has definitely, you know, shown that that's not true. But, you know, it's a slow, it moves at a glacial pace, our laws and everything. So now we're seeing, you know, different cities and states are decriminalizing. And I'm using ketamine in my practice. I've trained, you know, a lot of clinicians to be trained in psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. I've hosted retreats in holotropic breathwork, which is, you know, using air to have a psychedelic experience. Mm-hmm. Really amazing.
Right.
And doing retreats in Costa Rica. So I just wrote a book this year called The Theradelic Approach. And my career right now is all about helping people get trained in, you know, doing really good ethical psychedelic assisted psychotherapy that's trauma informed. That feels very important.
Absolutely.
That's kind of the the overview.
I appreciate it. I mean, that was a very thorough yet succinct overview, which is great, because then we can now get into more specifics.
And let's unpack it.
My first question that comes to mind, and I think this is a question that many people listening will have, just for what you just spoke to about how these other psychedelic approaches, so ketamine, the only really legal one in the United States, when do you see that changing? I know you said it's like moving at a glacial, like very, very slow approach, but I don't know if you have any insight on that, because I think a lot of people would be very curious to know, like, when it's going to open up to further different, you know.
It's an interesting landscape for sure. I went to the Psychedelic Science conference this year in June, the MAPS puts on. 14,000 people there. I mean, amazing, right? So we have a lot of push for this. And we have states and cities that are decriminalizing the classic psychedelics, plant medicines like psilocybin and, you know, DMT and things like that. But with MDMA, MAPS is thinking that it's going to be late 2024, 2025 for the rescheduling. Yep. We're currently in expanded access. So that's like the final stage of the FDA. What's interesting about that whole project, it's very unique. It's the first time the FDA has approved something that's a medicine and a therapy that have to be paired together. So getting these two different branches of the FDA to work together is really a challenge, right? And how amazing is this? This is like revolutionary to say, you have to get therapy if you're taking these medicines, which is amazing, right?
Yes.
But the science is showing that those two paired together, it's really important that those are together, the medicine and the therapy.
Yes.
And then psilocybin, we're thinking 2025. What's interesting, what most people don't know is that the research that's being done on psilocybin in the United States now is on patented medicine called psilocin. It's not on whole plant psilocybin.
Oh.
This is most people don't understand this. So the reason why is that there are so many constituents in whole plant psilocybin that the FDA says, well, we don't know what's working. And so companies like Compass and Hefner and USONA have isolated psilocin, and that's what they're doing the testing on. So when we look at these medicines being legalized or rescheduled, it's likely that it'll be a patented medicine,
sure,
a version of psilocybin, that will be with a structure like MDMA, where it'll be paired with psychotherapy. There's another whole movement that's happening in the United States that different cities and states are decriminalizing whole plant. So you have something that's really interesting that's happening in places like Colorado and Oregon, where psilocybin is decriminalized. So you have a lot of therapists that are going in and utilizing this, but technically they can't give the patients the psilocybin. So the patients have to get it themselves at a dispensary or whatever, and then bring it to the session. And then the therapist is basically facilitating the journey.
I see.
So it's a really interesting landscape that, like, a lot of things are changing. Everything's changing all the time. And, you know, paying really close attention on the legal aspects of these things.
Definitely. A quick question on that, because I believe I'm familiar with what you're talking about, but in terms of the particular compound that was isolated and is what is going through to potentially be that delivered in therapy, but is that the compound that's broken down? Like, when you actually ingest psilocybin, the whole plant, that it's broken down into that compound that you just mentioned, right?
That's the active ingredient as far as we know.
Yes.
I mean, and this is the thing too, is that, you know, indigenous people have been using these whole plants for centuries.
Yes.
And probably have a better understanding than we do. So I'm not saying that this is the best way to do this is to patent medicine and charge. I mean, I'm not advocating for this. I think Maria Sabina probably knows a lot more, and her lineage knew a lot more about these medicines than, you know, people in a white lab coat isolating these down, you know.
100%. Yeah. And I think I was just confirming that for my own awareness, but then also, again, our listeners to know, like, what you were even just speaking about, not that you condone it or, you know, agree.
Yeah.
With
I just want to make that clear, because I'm just such an advocate for holistic approaches, you know,
right.
Something I talk about a lot in the Theradelic approach, and also in my training, is, you know, we have such a focus in our culture on medicine, right? And we don't think about the holistic container of what, you know, what's the set and setting. What kind of thoughts, feelings, and media and conversations have people been, you know, having leading up to the journey? What's the space like? How safe do they feel with the practitioner? The music even is a healing component. The natural world outside is a healing component. If you're doing it in a group, the entire group of people, the cohort that you're in, the sangha, or the journeyers that you're journeying with, are part of it, right? So I like to pull the lens back and really focus on, there are so many other healing elements here besides just a little molecule that's rewiring your brain, right?
Agreed. 100%. Mm-hmm. You're speaking my language, because quick backstory of myself, because this is our first meeting, but I went to school to get my doctorate in pharmacy. I did not complete it because I started to have this awareness shift in me that just a pill, like, you know, just focusing on that is so limiting. And obviously this is a completely different topic, but it speaks to the same point that you're making, that it's not just that one little compound that provides the therapy in this case, or in the case that I was in, the healing, which I saw was more so we were treating symptoms, not actually healing in modern medication in many cases. So I left that path, but I 100% agree. We have to take that more holistic approach. And until we do, as a society, I think, in the United States, then it's just a losing battle.
I appreciate your perspective very much. And I agree with you. I think, you know, I think that it's such a limiting view, and it just leaves so much out when we don't have a bigger conversation about these things, you know?
Yes.
You know, when people are coming to my retreats, I tell them, the minute you decide to embark on this journey, the medicine is working through you. You're inviting the energy of it into your world. Doing a dieta for ayahuasca, for example, doing a dieta for any journey, any retreat that's coming up is really important. Really paying attention to what foods you're eating, what things you're drinking, what kind of media you're consuming, what are you watching on TV? I mean, all of these things start weaving themselves into your journey, right?
Yes.
How is your heart with your loved ones and your people around you? How's your communication? All of these things factor in and become just bringing awareness, like having, it's almost like a meditation, you know, and making this a sacred journey from the beginning to the, when you ingest the medicine, to when you're integrating the medicine and metabolizing it and coming back, your psyche is coming back into your regular life. All of that is the hero or heroine's journey that the medicine is working through you. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's really time for us to change our ways of doing things in this country, where we think about these bigger things. You know, how are we impacting the environment?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like everything that we do would be so healed if we thought about things in a more holistic way.
Absolutely. 100%. And, you know, I want to say it's so refreshing to hear that from you as a licensed therapist in the United States, because I know many people in your position, maybe just not focused on the same thing, but that they have a certain approach and it's like, it's this or the highway. Like, this is what works. And it's not true. Like, it may work for some people, it may not work for others. And that, like you said, holistic approach, there's many different paths to healing, and that seeing that there is, then you can open up to what would be best for you. Mm-hmm. And in this case, for what your focus is, like realizing that is just a larger picture.
Yeah.
Not just the psychedelic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think kind of in a related, you know, to bring, you know, I say science and spirituality, you know, bring the science into it. A really good scientist is always open to new information, is always open to being disproven. Right. So I think a person that is a true, good health practitioner is always open to better information. Right. I have an opinion about what works. And then if I'm updated with better information, I'm going to update what works, right?
Right.
I think it's the way to be.
Absolutely.
And I think we're seeing in our, you know, in the destruction of the environment and our social isolation and the epidemic of depression, PTSD and anxiety, that isolating things down to one little thing isn't the answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not working. It's just not working, right? So we've got to think ourselves, you know, we've got to think in new ways, or maybe really old ways that have been working for a long time.
Absolutely. I'm really glad you said that, because I wanted to direct us back to that, because you mentioned this a couple of times. So like, to get like, you literally use the word, like, give it, put it as like, I think you use the term like couching it. I really like that. It was like bringing it to the table, in essence, like that conversation of like, I mean, even just where these plant medicines came from. So I'm curious to hear what you'd like to share in terms of that, like bringing that to the table and like talking about that, like where this sacred medicine came from.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are so many, right?
Right.
You can talk about all the classic psychedelics. I mean, you know, psilocybin, the story is, you know, Maria Sabina in 52 showed the Wassons, you know, led a mushroom veleda for them in Mexico in Huautla. And they took that and brought it back to the United States. And then Life magazine had a big story on psilocybin. And then, you know, all these Americans started going down there and invading the town. And poor Maria Sabina was, you know, ostracized by her community. They burned down her house. They were so angry that she let Westerners, you know, North Americans know about these sacred, you know, plant ceremonies, and she died starving and broke, you know. So it hasn't been great for a lot of indigenous communities. It has been good for some when there's tourism that's reciprocal, but a lot of these plant medicines have been used for a long time. So psilocybin, you know, we have the story about Mexico, but actually magic mushrooms have been used throughout the world. They've been found with, you know, even cavemen. They found them on like Neanderthals and stuff in little pouches, you know, these psilocybin mushrooms in Europe and Siberia. So magic mushrooms have been probably used throughout the world. Ayahuasca comes from the Amazon in South America. And that tradition, there are all kinds of little traditions that have, you know, in different areas and pockets of the Amazon that have, you know, amazing ayahuasca, you know, ceremonies and practices. MDMA, of course, is synthesized. It's a chemical. Psilocybin is a chemical. Or, I'm sorry. Yeah. Ketamine is a chemical. Ketamine was created in, I think, 1962 by Calvin Stevens. He invented ketamine, and it was originally used as an anesthetic. And it wasn't until the 90s that they figured out that it had psychotropic effects. So kind of interesting that it was a psychedelic actually at lower doses. And then there's ibogaine. Ibogaine comes from Africa. Ibogaine is a very, very powerful psychedelic, more powerful than ayahuasca. It's very intense.
Wow.
Really effective for treating heroin addiction, opioid addiction. It binds up to the same receptors and can really help with those kinds of issues. What else? 5-MeO that from the toads. Was that there's some controversy. Actually, there's a really interesting podcast with Hamilton about the history of 5-MeO, that it was discovered. It was, I think it was chemically synthesized at the same time it was discovered. So they don't really know the history of it.
Interesting.
It's up for debate. So we don't really know. I think it was in the Sonoran toad is the animal that carries the 5-MeO. So yeah, and peyote has been used by indigenous Americans for a long time in Mexico and the Southern United States. So yeah, these different psychedelics have a lot of history.
Right. Well, thank you for that breakdown. I know that was a loaded question, and I appreciate you doing that justice to share just like the different origins, which again,
yeah, I don't know if I did it justice. I talk about it in more depth in the book.
Right. Right.
It was like going through the book, like, oh yeah, I remember.
Right. Well, speaking of your book, I want to hear more about it because obviously, you know, there's these backgrounds, you have a certain way of approaching it. So tell us about your Theradelic approach.
Yeah. Well, I was working for different entities, training people in psychedelic therapy. And it became really obvious to me that these medicines are very, very powerful. And it's essential that people who are working with them are working ethically, are very well trained, and are trauma informed. I was seeing that people that have trauma, it can, especially repressed trauma that they don't remember, it can percolate up during a psychedelic journey. So I was inspired to write the book to help lay the foundation for what does it mean to be a well-trained psychedelic practitioner. So the first part of the book is really couching the conversation in a larger narrative around where we're at in the world right now. You know, so the first section is really like we're at this really important crossroads where we have climate collapse, we have, you know, AI that's on the brink of exacerbating our social isolation even more and really making us question what's real and what's not real. You know, these echo chambers getting really extreme. And then we have this epidemic of anxiety, depression, and PTSD. And we don't have enough mental health providers that can meet that need. You know, we're trying to get people trained as fast as possible. So here comes psychedelics, right? And I think that I don't think it's a panacea. I don't think it cures everything. I don't think it's the solution to everything. But how interesting is it that its resurgence is happening right now at this critical time. And it really increases our potency as therapists to leverage the power of these medicines to get a lot of great work done, if you know what you're doing.
Mm.
So that's the first section of the book. And then I talk about the history of psychedelics. And then I talk about what does it look like to host a psychedelic journey? What's important? And it's for clinicians, but it's also for people that are looking for, you know, to do these medicines. Right. And what's important to know about how to find a good practitioner, what to look for in the journey. Right. So that's the book. And I'm doing a series of trainings in 2024 for clinicians on how to, you know, how to do good psychedelic therapy.
Nice.
But, you know, you mentioned early in the conversation about recreational use, and I think recreational use is great. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Mm. You know, if you look at the etymology of the word recreate, it's recreate,
mm-hmm.
right? What's wrong with recreating? What's wrong with having a reset?
Yes. So intentionally, of course.
Totally. There's value in that. There's nothing wrong with having fun, right?
Right.
But people who have trauma, and often people don't even realize they have trauma, can have a really intense experience with psychedelics,
right?
That can be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not about gatekeeping and like punishing people for having psychedelic experiences or whatever, or you have to have a therapist. But for safety, I think having someone who knows how to host a journey and lead someone through
right.
can be really beneficial.
Yeah, right? I agree 100%.
Yeah.
I'm curious. So I don't know 100% because we have an audience and there are thousands of people. So there probably are therapists out there that listen to our work and that would be interested in your approach so that they can learn more as a therapist and see if they're interested or further their work. But mm-hmm. I have a feeling most are, especially just the age range, we have people, like most of our listeners are from age 18 to like 35 or so. And so just from the age might be just that they're not therapists and more mm-hmm. curious of like the journey for themselves. And so I'm curious what you would add as a, even just a tip or support, because you mentioned you obviously get that further into that in the book and more in depth, but mm-hmm. what's a tip or just something that is like, I don't know, like a cornerstone for having a journey, whether it's assisted or whether it's on their own, what would you encourage?
Well, I mean, that's a larger conversation. It's
sure. Like 100%. Yeah. And that's why I said like, and recommend definitely getting the book then to dive deeper, but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I think that there are several things to think about. You know, until we have more research, I think it's important for people who have any kind of history of schizophrenia or mania to be very careful with these medicines. So in general, this is super loose in general, but if someone's way of thinking, patterns of thinking is more disorganized, like towards schizophrenia or mania, psychedelics can make that more exacerbated, right? This is from Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, kind of these ideas. If you have rigid thinking patterns, so things like OCD or anxiety or depression, where you loop and ruminate and you have more of a rigid pattern, psychedelics are great for, right? Mm. So that's a super general, but being really careful, you know, I screen out a lot of people that these medicines are not appropriate for.
Mm.
Taking a psychedelic can induce a manic episode if you have that propensity. So that's an important tip. I think really being in an environment that's safe and having someone who you really trust with you is very important. These medicines are typically, especially psilocybin and LSD, they're not toxic. You know, it's really hard to overdose with psilocybin. I don't think there's ever been a case that they've really documented that is, you know, someone died from an overdose of psilocybin or LSD, I believe. Ketamine, it can be dangerous in high doses. Mm. And MDMA can cause serotonin syndrome. But what's more important, so physically they're pretty safe, relatively, but they can be psychologically dangerous if you're not in a good set and setting. So it's important to have someone who's really safe that will honor your boundaries, that'll sit with you, that can help calm you. You know, I'm not advocating doing this, but if you're going to do a journey, make sure that you're in a safe environment, right? There's a really great website called Arrowhead that has a lot of information for people that are, you know, journeying on their own. But again, I think going the route of having a therapist with you is by far the safest, best decision,
mm-hmm.
especially right. if you have a history of trauma. I mean, that's really important. And I'll tell you, every week I'll have a client that didn't even realize that they had trauma, and they'll remember wow. something that was traumatic. You know, maybe yep. every week I'll have someone that just, oh wow, I didn't realize that was there, you know, and having a trauma-informed therapist with you is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I don't really believe in bad trips if you have the proper set and setting,
right?
Because when difficult things come up, you know, it's like a dream, you know, being a dream analyst, it's like, bad dreams are actually trying to get you to look at something you need to see.
Exactly.
You know, like I think about trauma, like unprocessed trauma is kind of like a sliver that's gotten infected in your arm mm. and it's got a bunch of scar tissue over it.
Right.
And so you can just keep putting salve or whatever on top of it, but you're never really dealing with the infection. So doing really good, effective trauma work is kind of like getting in there, taking out the sliver, cleaning it out, and putting a nice bandage on top, right? So it's not easy. It can be painful work.
Right.
But you're actually going to the source and working through it.
Yes.
I trust the psyche. The psyche is incredibly wise. And if we give it the proper, midwifing, it'll move toward health. We just have to give it that, that help, that assistance to keep it safe as it does its thing, right?
Right. Definitely. Yeah. You're speaking the language of my brother. I wish he was here, but he's taking some time off from being a co-host. But he got trained as a traditional Chinese medicine doctor. So acupuncture. And so that's like the basis, like the foundation of all of that Eastern medicine of that the body knows. I mean, the body is also obviously composed, has the mind as well. So I thought the healing is there. It's just, like you said, the space and having the right setting, the right support to be able to actually have that rise up so that you can heal. But like you said, that's really important. I think I love your analogy because I think that speaks to the point how difficult it would be on your own. Because imagine having that gas, and even if you're trained, it's still, there's that deep, deep pain. Like you actually doing the procedure yourself. Yeah. I can't imagine that. Like I've seen that on like some movies or stuff, but like, yeah. No, I don't think that's very, very difficult. Like why fight that uphill battle when you can get support? Like you said,
absolutely. You know, I love that you brought up TCM because it's exactly the same concept, that everything is in motion and stagnant energy becomes problematic, right? That's a concept that's in TCM. And I think the same with emotions. You know, if you think about the etymology of that word, it's motion. It's moving through. You don't want trauma stuck in your body and in your psyche. You want it moving through. Mm-hmm. And psychedelics can really open that up and allow that movement. It's really interesting, especially with ketamine. Ketamine works on the NMDA receptor sites. It's different than the classic psychedelics, and it creates this really interesting effect where you're in an observer mind at the right dose. An observer looking at your life or other things like from a little bit of distance.
Yep.
And so with that, there's this ability to have a little bit of detachment so that you can work through things. It's really amazing. It's super helpful.
That's so incredible.
I'm trained in internal family systems and other modalities like EMDR and Gottman couples method, etc. But with internal family systems, the basic concept is this idea that we're made of many, many parts, many personalities. We're not like a singular being. We're many beings. And so using IFS, internal family systems, with ketamine is super powerful because you can get in that observer, that self energy, and you can look at all your parts. Oh, I've got this part that gets, constellated around my mom and when she calls and you can see that and you can say, oh, I have compassion for that part. I'm curious about what that experience is like for you. And if you have a guide that can help guide you through that thinking through that process, it can be really, really effective. Right.
Absolutely. You're speaking my language because I'm trained in the lineage of transcendentalism. So that's just rooted straight up in metacognition. But I had never heard that there is a modality coupled with the psychedelic, but that it literally induces that or supports that ability to be in that observer seat. That's incredible.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. It's very powerful. Mm. And it really helps to have someone kind of there guiding you through that.
Yes.
To help integrate. Oh, okay. I'm not, an example. I have so many great examples from stories, but I'll tell you, I had one client who, I work a lot with low dose ketamine. So it's such a low dose. It's barely you can barely perceive it, but it just kind of opens things up. And so we do the internal family system. Anyway, she was having this experience where you have this like really, usually a very, luscious visual experience going on, right? So she's closing her eyes and she's talking to me throughout the session. And she says, oh, I'm stuck on this wall. And I'm just like sliding along this wall and I can't get off this wall. I'm just stuck there. If you didn't have someone with you, that could turn into a bad trip, right? Oh, this is like this torturous thing. I'm stuck here. But I could see from my perspective, Oh, this is something where it's a part of her. It's a protector that doesn't want her to go past this wall. So I invited her to get curious about that. Wow, I wonder what part of you that wall is. This is like dream analysis, right?
Yep.
I wonder what the wall is in your psyche. So as she's traveling along, we're working with it with using IFS techniques. She said, oh, it's opened up and now there's a window here. Okay, so her psyche is playing along with this, right? And so it's allowing her to see deeper into herself. So then I say, okay, what do you see in the through the window? Oh, I can see this little girl way far away in the courtyard. So obviously, like, as you know, we think, okay, this is like some younger part of her, and like we call them an IFS, an exiled part of her psyche that she isn't allowed to see usually. Okay, let's get curious about that. And she's like, oh, I can't get in there. And so we do more IFS work about being curious, being compassionate toward the little girl. All of a sudden a drawbridge opens, and here's the drawbridge that opens up to allow her access into the, you know, and so this is the value of having a guide.
Yes.
That's not telling you what it means, but inviting you to be curious about it so that you don't get lost in the loops of fear and bad trip energy.
Right.
Does this make sense?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled to hear you brought up the IFS. I'm familiar with it. I haven't gotten any training. I've not done that therapy, but I'm aware of that and how effective it's been over the years that it's been around.
Yeah.
And I think I could have, if I remember correctly from when we got connected, that you actually know the founder, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Dick Schultz and I do retreats together and we do trainings together. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, he invented it in the 80s. I mean, it's been around a long time.
Right. Decades.
Way before most of your listeners were even born.
Same with me. I was born in 92. My birthday's coming up in 2 days. So yeah, this
happy birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it. But yeah, it's incredible. That's amazing.
Yeah. And he's been, you know, we speak together about this, but you know, he always says, yeah, I thought IFS was really effective. And then when I saw the power of the ketamine combined with it, it really makes it like 10 sessions in a couple of hours.
Wow.
So it's very effective. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So is that, I think you said that you primarily use ketamine right now. And I think that's just because of the legalities of it, but
yeah,
I'm just curious, what's the future for you? What do you see for yourself and your practice and where it's going?
Yeah. I mean, I love doing the training because we need a lot of people out there doing it. But yeah, as soon as I'm able, of course, I'll use MDMA and psilocybin and whatever else, you know. These medicines, each of these different psychedelics has a totally different, what's called a signature, kind of an energy about them. And they're good for different things, you know. So having an expanded toolbox is super helpful. But the thing I really love about ketamine is it's very short acting comparatively. It's, you know, 2 hours. Whereas, you know, psilocybin is like a 10-hour experience.
Right.
So, you know, that's a big, you know, it's a big energy cost, you know, for therapists to be in a session for 10 hours. And, you know, so just for practicality, ketamine is very helpful. And the thing I love about ketamine too, that's different than other psychedelics, is it's very different at different doses. So you can be really creative about how you work treatment plans, where you can do really low dose and then you can do mid dose and have a deeper experience. And then it's very different with different routes of administration. So, you know, ketamine can be in a nasal spray. People can use it as a lozenge under the tongue. It can be injected in an intramuscular injection, or it can be in an IV. And what I prefer is IM, intramuscular injection, for the mid dose. And then oral lozenges for the low dose, the psycholytic dose. But it feels almost like a different medicine. It's a very interesting drug.
What are the differences, if you'd be willing to share a bit on that?
Yeah, yeah. It's so at a low dose, it feels like, so a lot of people say it feels to them like MDMA at the low dose, where it's kind of an entactogen, like it's a sensual experience. It takes the edge off. So your protectors, that's what we call them in IFS, that the managers and the parts that are like afraid and trying to, you know, those get kind of softened back. So you can have a conversation with the therapist and interact. And it's almost like you're in a hypnotic trance, but you're still pretty lucid, right? So that's how I use it with those lower doses. And then at the mid dose, which is different for if you're doing it lozenge versus intramuscular because of the rate of absorption. But if you get it right, you don't want to go so high that it's like they forget everything and it's like anesthesia, you know, right. You're getting your wisdom teeth taken out or whatever. From training, they use ketamine for surgeries and stuff.
Right.
So you're getting the dose to where they're still somewhat conscious. So it's a sub anesthetic dose, but they're deep in experience where they want to just keep their eye mask on. The Broca's area of the brain is downregulated, so they can't really talk at that higher dose very much, or they don't want to.
Yep.
But their body is extremely relaxed and their mind is just traveling. And the signature of ketamine is this feeling of movement and journeying through spaces. And so that mid dose, the way that session looks like is they come in, we do some processing, they put on an eye mask, I play amazing music for them, and they just go on their journey for like an hour. And then when they come back in their body, they're still very relaxed and open and ready to talk after about an hour and a half. And then we do like an IFS session.
Interesting.
Out. Yeah.
I'm curious, what do you do during that hour, hour and a half when they're journeying?
You know, it's really an important thing to be super present. So I'm just right there with them, you know, tracking them, making sure that they're comfortable. You know, sometimes if people are really distressed, I'll hold a hand, but generally I just kind of hang out near them. Sometimes when people are agitated, I'll just get really, close enough to them that they can sense and just do really slow, deep breathing. And that helps regulate their, it's like a co-regulation technique, help regulate their nervous system. But it's wild because people that are in those spaces can really pick up on your energy.
Yeah, I bet.
So if you're like distracted or sending texts or eating, I mean, you know, they'll sense that.
Yep.
So you're really in like a meditative presence and attuned with people.
Wow.
Yeah. It's quite interesting. And I love it. I feel like it's so relaxing for me to be in that space with people, just like calm presence. You
right.
know, it's such an honor to be able to witness people in that space. It's really moving. It's really moving.
The word that came to mind, it sounds like, I wouldn't want to say like, oh, this is your experience, but it sounds like to me it's just really a privilege, but you just echoed it with the similar word of honor, really, like
to be
in that space with them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the most amazing thing to be in a space with someone like that. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I move to tears often.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah. And just seeing the healing that comes. I mean, ketamine is incredibly effective for treating, especially any kind of suicidality, anxiety, depression. Mm. It's amazing. Like treatment resistant depression means that people have tried everything and nothing works, right? So if they come and do ketamine, they did a study, it's in JAMA's archives, 70% reduction in treatment resistant depression symptoms. 70%.
Yeah.
There's no psychotropic medication like SSRI that touches that.
Yep.
You know, and so I really get to see some amazing things, you know, where people have been so sad and so, you know, just unable to do anything, unable to, you know, go to work, and, you know, and then they have a ketamine experience and it's like they feel alive again. It's amazing.
That is incredible.
It's also incredible for anxiety too. And, you know, it's really incredible to see people, you know, being able to function and not, you know, especially things like social anxiety, ketamine is really great for. But, you know, it's again, I want to have the caveat that it's not a cure-all. It's not a panacea for everyone.
Yep.
And it's not a one-time thing. I think, you know, people are reading Michael Pollan's book and thinking, oh, I'm going to come and do ketamine and it's going to save my life. And it's going to be a one-time thing and I'm going to be cured forever. And it doesn't work that way. It would be nice if we could just take a pill and everything would be okay.
Right. But I agree with you. I mean, a part of me believes that too, is like, oh, it would be nice, where it's like, so my work I'm a life coach and help people in living their dreams and work through the modalities I mentioned, like transcendentalism, been trained in that, but it never is just one session. It's impossible, I don't think. Yeah. Even if like there's a huge breakthrough, it's like you continue living life and guess what? We go through trials and tribulations, but in a spiritual approach, I think that's, like you actually mentioned before, the hero or heroine's journey. Where would we be without our dragon to slay? You know, like that it's again, a part of me, I agree. It's like, man, like, especially with the state of the world, I wish it could be just that quick and easy, but yeah. I think it's there's a benefit, a hidden benefit to it that someone like yourself would know.
Yeah. And I want to add that I'm pro dragon. So I always say to negotiate with the dragon and not slay.
Oh, I see. I like it. Hey, I'm for that. I've loved dragons as a, you know, going back to your point before about like the, what's the word you use? Like the symbols, like just the in our psyche, like from being a child, I've always been enamored with dragons. I was never about like slaying them for sure as well, but I was just using that term, I think, because that's like the traditional hero's journey, you know, like saying that, but I agree. Yeah.
I'm playing with you. It's Joseph Campbell, you know, he says, you must enter the cave that you fear the most to slay the dragon and retrieve the pearl of your individuation. And that is, it's true. It's like, you really have to face those fears and, you know, and that's what gives us resiliency and grit.
Exactly.
You know, it's, I'm thinking about the thesis that I wrote for my master's degree was on the hero heroine's journey.
Amazing.
And there are four stations to it, right? The first one is where you're born and you're it's in archetypal psychology, it's sublimatio, or I'm sorry, solutio, it's water energy, right? And then you go into calcinatio, it's fire energy where you face the dragon. And then the third station is sublimatio, it's air energy. And that is really that kind of expansive, like, I'm on psychedelics and I'm merging with the divine. And it's like, I'm everything and I feel so good and everything's wonderful, but you don't stay in sublimatio forever. You have to walk down the mountain, right? You have to climb to the peak. You have to walk down the mountain and you have to metabolize that. And then that fourth station is coagulatio, earth energy, which means getting grounded, becoming back, you know, coming back to your village and tribe and putting your feet on the earth and really integrating what you experienced. And I think this is another component that really compelled me to write the book, because people are going and ayahuasca journeys every week or whatever. And it's, yeah, no, it's really, was it Alan Watts? I can't remember if it was Alan Watts, but I think he said, you know, once you get the message, hang up the phone, like, you know, really take time to metabolize what you experienced and these incredible insights that you've had. How do you take them and put them into your daily life?
Yes.
How can you live day to day? Like you were saying, you know, like life still happens and you still need support. And I think that that is something that's really important to talk about too, is with psychedelics, is it's not just the medicine.
Yes.
It's also, it's preparation, it's safety, and then it's integrating your experience and really thinking about, wow, you know, what do I do with this new information, this new awakening? And how can I be a better person in my life? How can I be more connected to my loved ones and to nature and to myself, right? How can I love myself more? How can I take better care of my body and my mind? You know, and that's my hope for people, is that, you know, that these experiences can really help them be more in love with themselves and their family and friends and nature, right? And our natural world.
Yes. Not only our life, but our world would change if that was the case as we go forward, which, I mean, your work clearly is a beacon of light as we're going forward in this new direction as a society, especially here in the United States, as we're talking about, because we have listeners from all around the world, but I'm sure maybe there's some things going on similar. I don't know, but I think our world needs it. And that this is an amazing way in which we can forge forward to a new world that works for everyone. It works for Mother Earth. Totally. But like you said, the integration piece, that's amazing. Which one other quick note, thank you for breaking down the different elements within the hero's journey. I've never heard of that ever.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's really based on the Marie-Louise von Franz. Was actually the first person that talked about the hero's journey in fairy tales. And that comes from her work. The sublimatio, solutio, calcinatio, coagulatio. And then Joseph Campbell, of course, expanded on that and made it well known. And thankfully, because it's such a great language for us to understand, you know, our journey through this life.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like there's a colleague of mine. She does a lot of indigenous work. She's a shaman. And She calls it returning to the sacred. Like, so I really appreciate you bringing in the elements as well as obviously like sharing where it stemmed from. So we give honor to, you know, the origins, but like, it really is returning to that origin, if I may say, even primal, like knowing where we came from as a species, not just, you know, whatever race we are. It's, we've all have these kind of backgrounds, these ancestors that really lived in a very, what's the word we were just speaking of? The holistic way, realizing that we're all connected, everything's connected.
Yeah. I mean, that's really my ultimate hope with doing this work. It's like these medicines really reconnect us to this greater view. And that's my biggest hope, is that we can help the earth and each other, like more peace, more compassion, more connectedness with one another and where we live. And, you know, so my hope is that your listeners feel inspired to look into psychedelics more. And also, you know, if you have a young audience really thinking about going into mental health professions and becoming psychedelic therapists, you know, trauma-informed psychedelic therapists, we need hundreds of thousands of them if we're going to make a dent in all this, you know.
Agreed.
And these medicines are going to be legalized in the next few years, and there's going to be all kinds of opportunity.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So more healers, please, more connection. Yeah.
Yes, we need it. You know, me and my brother often talk about that because my brother, with his background in it, he was an accountant. He does that work currently, but getting trained, as I mentioned, in traditional Chinese medicine, getting that inspiration. Me as a coach, like I left pharmacy to do this work, which I didn't know directly in my early 20s what was going on, where I was going or anything, but like following that call, that heart's path of like, it's not this, it's got to be something else, because I don't feel happy here. So I know that there are people listening that feel that, but may not have a direction. So I appreciate you for offering that as a potential to look into.
Yeah, definitely. We need you. We need to heal each other.
Yes.
What did Ram Dass say? We're all just walking each other home.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, I think that feels like a good landing point as we're coming to a close of this. This is amazing. This conversation went by like that.
Yeah.
Any final points you want to share that is coming to mind? Obviously, you know, sharing your book, we'll have links in the description of this episode for all the ways that people can connect with you. If there's any words you want to put to that as well, sure. But any final thoughts?
Yeah, I really appreciate your time. I love, you know, meeting with new audiences and talking about this work. I'm really, really passionate about it. And again, just like helping each other, healing each other, having compassion and, you know, and exploring these incredible medicines in safe and conscious ways, you know,
yes,
integrity and ethics and all of that. It's an amazing world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for adding more to our individual world over here and science and spirituality with our audience, and really appreciate your insights today. It's brilliant.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.
You too.
And that's it for today. So thanks for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. So any questions, any comments, connect with us on Instagram personally at Kevin F. Carton
or at Chris J. Carton or our podcast or Instagram page at Science and Spirituality Podcast. And if you feel guided to, the one thing that we do ask is for you to please rate the podcast and also leave a review. This way we can reach more people and in that way impact more lives. So with that, we'll see you on the next episode.